Here we go.
The following takes place between 7 and 8.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Wine enthusiasts can call us at any time during the broadcast by dialing 646-727-3235. Once again, the number is 646-727-3235. Wine industry representatives are also encouraged to join us on air.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Mike Brown, the Wine Growers Association of Georgia.
The executive director.
Michelle Meyer. I work with my father, Les Meyer, at Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery.
We're located at 417 Vicksburg Road, Westport, Mass., and our phone number is 508.
I'm on the board of directors for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people on, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
Yay! And here we are. We're on the program tonight. Thank you, bus people. No rains today. Bus people are having a good time out there. Thank you. Thank you. All right, that's enough. Go back to drinking. Mike's on the line right now trying to get somebody else onto the thing. We have a lot of speakers tonight, a lot of wineries. The New Mexico was our topic last week. We had a couple of speakers on last week, but we also had some that couldn't make it, and so we stretched it out to 2 weeks and are bringing them on tonight with us. So we have a bunch of wineries that are going to talk a little bit about it and all that, but we're going to jump right into it. I'm not going to talk too much about New Mexico because we did last week, and there's no reason to, you know, repeat everything again. First one we're going to be talking to is Jesse Padberg from Vivek Winery that is located in New Mexico, obviously, since that's what we're talking about is New Mexico wines and New Mexico wineries. So we're going to bring Jesse on. He's got stuff to tell us about the drought down there and the fires being close to him and all sorts of stuff. So let's bring Jesse on the air here and let him start talking. Hello, Jesse, you there? No, he's not there. Oh, he's there. Now we can bring him on.
Hi.
Are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing?
Good.
That was a shock. I looked up and he's already taken out of there.
Well, yeah, I can control him here. I've got the board in front of me, so I can control. I can control all of you.
Okay.
There you go. Jesse, Vivek Winery, where is it located?
Vivek is how it's pronounced, and we're located in northern New Mexico, a little town called Dixon.
Dixon, that is how far, how close, how where?
We're about 25 miles south of Taos and 45 miles north of Santa Fe.
Oh,
basically,
okay.
Yeah. So we're right up there in the north. It's a beautiful little valley that we've got going. Both Santa Fe and Taos are at about 7,000 feet, and we're down at 6. So we're kind of we're the banana belt of the north, basically, of northern New Mexico.
It seems like all the wineries we contact in New Mexico all are in little valleys. I mean, that's just, you know, little micro climates and micro valleys that y'all tend to be in, it seems like.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's, you know, New Mexico, the entire state's pretty much above about 4,000 feet. And so microclimate really plays a huge role here in New Mexico. And, you know, if you get down southern New Mexico, it's a little more fair game as far as where you can plant, but up here in northern New Mexico, it's pretty site specific.
it sounds like it. Vivek, you say, is pronounced?
Vivek, yeah, it means high altitude refuge because, you know, at 6,000 feet, we're one of the highest growing places that you can grow grapes, basically outside of Argentina.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. What do you grow there?
What we're growing here at this point is, you know, a lot of whites and hardier reds that, you know, Austrian whites and reds and stuff like that. But Vivek kind of specializes in a lot of reds. We source only from New Mexico, and Our vineyards are fairly young at this point, but our winery at this point is about 8 years old.
Uh-huh. You say reds, what, Cabernet and Merlot?
A lot of Italian varietals, but we do Cabernet, Merlot, Syrah, which are, you know, some more standard types. But then we do also a lot of Italian varietals, meaning like Sangiovese, Nebbiolo, Dolcetto. Some of our favorites. Refosco is a real interesting one that we do out of northern Italy.
Oh, those are from the grapes, rootstock, and all that that you planted came from Italy itself, or?
You know, mostly everybody plants pretty much from nurseries from here in the United States. But yeah, originally the grapes would have come from Italy to the nurseries in the United States, and then they cultivate them and send them out to various growers around the United States or whatever. So yeah, basically one of our favorite growers that we buy grapes from is an Italian trained viticulturist, and he came from the Friuli region in Italy, which is kind of north of Venice on the northeastern side, I guess. And so he, Refosco is one of, is a grape that comes from his region in Italy, but he's a fan of most of the Italian varietals. And then he's also a really, really capable grower of all kinds of varietals, which is why New Mexico actually has a pretty good ability to make decent wine, is because of this one guy, Paolo De Andrea is his name.
Wow. That's interesting. I talked to Michelle earlier, and she said that you were going to be on. She said that she mentioned something about the drought you're in right now. Is there a serious one going on down there?
There is a good sized drought, and we had a really hardcore winter as well. So New Mexico's kind of hurting a little bit as far as the grapes. Some certain areas have gotten hit real hard. We actually up here, our varietals are a little bit hardier, and we're own-rooted and stuff like that, so we have not had the damage that some places, like in southern New Mexico, have had. Some vineyards that I know of have been wiped out completely, hundreds of acres and stuff. But
wow.
But, wow. Yeah, no, Vivac is doing okay.
the fire, she said that, you know, you were close to some of the fires?
Oh, yeah, it's fire. Yeah, New Mexico has been on fire. It's kind of coming under control now. We've got a lot of the monsoons have finally gotten here in the last week or so, and I think the fires are kind of taming down. But yeah, that Los Alamos fire was sending us quite a bit of smoke here for the last couple of weeks. It was kind of crazy.
It's interesting. Down here in Florida, we have our share of fires too. And in fact, just yesterday there was a lot of smoke floating around out at the winery, and so I understand it's almost. Almost frightening. There's been times when the brush has caught fire and moved its way right on up close to the winery.
Oh, no kidding.
I was looking at your wines here, and I noticed a couple of them that popped out at me. I'm sure you know which ones I'm talking about. The Red Hot Mama and the Buxom Blonde. you obviously quite proud of those. $99 a bottle and only by the case with no discounts. Why so special?
You know, we actually it's $99 a case. It's they're $9.99 a bottle, and they're a side project that we have that's a lot of fun. Just a real nice, easy drinking red and a nice, easy drinking white. They're both blends, and we definitely love those wines as well. We kind of do them as distribution only. We do sell the bottles in the tasting room, but we don't do like tastings and stuff of them because it's a second label for us, is basically it.
I see. Okay. I misread that. I was reading the prices on here and I saw 99. I went, wow. You know, that's, your soil that you have in your valley there in your area, what type of soil?
We are basically sandy loam over most of northern New Mexico. We have one of our vineyards that's mostly, I don't know, even if you put the word loam in there, it's pretty much sand in a lot of ways. And then our other vineyard is sandy loam, like pretty solidly. Real well draining soils, fairly rocky. Is pretty much what we're looking at in most of the state. Actually, you can get some areas of clay, but we don't have any of that here in Dixon.
I see. And you use a drip system for your watering?
Yeah, drip system, and one of our vineyards has irrigation as well. So we do we have like a cover crop that's on the sandy vineyard, so that we can get some nutrients into the soil a little bit. Vines don't really like to be the richest soils. I mean, the vine themselves would like it, but for winemaking, you want a grape that's been raised in a little bit deprivation, a nutrient
stressed.
Deprivation or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Somewhat stressed. And, anything here in the Southwest is fairly stressed anyway. So even if you were in super rich soils, it's still going to be stressed because it is a desert,
Yeah. Well, I know. But yeah, hey, I'm in Florida.
right. So, yeah.
We got horrible soil. We don't have soil. We have sand. So, how many acres do you have planted?
Right now we've got only about 4 acres planted, and it accounts for about 15% of our total production at this point.
Oh,
and,
where are you getting the grapes?
We buy other grapes from other growers around the state, so we get a lot of grapes from the southern part of the state where they can grow varietals that we can't particularly grow up here. Basically we're in the process. We've got about 15 acres that we can expand into that we own right now. So we're mostly just experimenting with varietals, trying to figure out what we can plant and stuff like that.
I see. That answers some of the questions too. What I was going to ask. Your harvest and bud break. What, mid-April? Bud break.
Actually, watch. Check this out. It's the last week in May. We get we get our bud break. Yeah. And so it's later coming out, and we could still get a freeze after that. But it's about the 15th of May is when we think that the last freeze should come, although the last 2 years we've gotten a freeze on June 1st and 3rd. So yeah, it's pretty wild. And then as far as harvesting, we're looking around end of September, 1st of October, something like that.
So pretty reasonably short growing season then, since you're getting such a late bud break.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it is quite a short growing season, and we have to choose varietals that don't take extra long, obviously.
Yeah.
And then everything else, people in the southern part of the state is going to have to grow for us,
Are you in an AVA? I know New Mexico has three of them. Are you in one of them?
We are not yet. We're working on it at this point. We've got an AVA. I don't know what you call him exactly, but a specialist that is he's working on getting a Northern New Mexico AVA, which will be the Northern Rio Grande Valley.
Oh,
and
wow!
That'll include us and over to Abiquiu and Velarde, kind of, and probably like the Espanola Valley, but not as far south as like Santa Fe or any of that.
Yeah, well, the middle Rio Grande covers that, though. That starts picking up down there, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll be the Northern Rio Grande at this point.
Quick history of Vivac Winery. When did you open? Chris and you and Michelle are the three that run it, I understand.
Yeah, and actually my brother Chris's wife Liliana runs it as well. So it was originally founded by Chris and myself back in 1998. We made our mission statement, and by 2003 we had gotten all our business licenses and liquor licenses and had wine that we could sell.
Uh-huh.
And at that point we were dating our then girlfriends, and they were working the tasting room for us, and we were making wine and things like that. In the last, I'd say 4 or 5 years, the girls have been running the entire business end, and leaving Chris and I to what we do best, which is the grapes and the wine.
Very good. Do you have formal training in winemaking?
Originally, we did not, but yes, we are. We're on the path to becoming certified UC Davis certified winemakers. We're also all four of us are actually sommeliers, certified sommeliers, and
oh, very good.
We kind of self-trained in the beginning, and you know, asked a million questions and apprenticed at different wineries and stuff like that out here. But pretty soon we learned that we better get a formal education, and so UC Davis has helped us out with that. And luckily, they have that extension program, which has been absolutely fabulous, and we've been able to learn a lot of the stuff that we need to learn.
Fantastic, Mike. You have any questions that you'd like to ask Jesse here? Oh, Mike's not there. Mike's probably out getting our next speaker on. Yeah, well, he does have our next speaker on. Jesse, tell us
yes, sir.
All information. Give us the contact number for Vivac Winery. Tell us the email, the phone number, how people can get in touch with you, because we have lots of archive listeners and lots of listeners. And if they want to get in touch with you, give us all the information on the winery, so that they can do so.
You've got it. Let's see. Vivac Winery, our phone number, and we're open 7 days a week, and anybody can answer your call over there. It is 505-579-4441. And our web address is vivacwinery.com, which is spelled V-I-V-A-C, winery.com. And we have a Facebook you know, you can contact us on Facebook, which is Vivac Winery. And we thank you very much for having us.
Well, great.
Oh,
thank
you.
You
know
for
what
being
I would
the...
like?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I would like to tell everybody, too, is if they are interested in trying New Mexico wines, we are actually the highest rated red wines in New Mexico. So if they want to start somewhere, might as well start with us.
All right. That sounds great. Thank you very much, Jesse. I appreciate the time that you spent with us tonight. And anyone wants to get a hold of you, then they got the information. And we'll hope people do. So, again, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir, for having us on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jesse.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Okay.
All right. We have Mark Matheson from Matheson Wine Company on with us now, and he's been waiting patiently out there. I hope patiently.
if you're not a winemaker at all, if you don't have patience, that's for
that's
sure.
That's very true. That's very true. Good point. Very good point. Well, welcome, Mark. Tell
Thank
us about
you.
Matheson
Thank
Wine
you
Company.
Matheson Wine Company started. We started our first vintage was 2005. I've been in New Mexico since 1987, and made wines at different wineries and consulted at a lot of different wineries in the Southwest. But we finally were able to scrape enough capital together and started our winery in the 2005 vintage. Yeah.
Your own grapes, or you bought grapes?
I buy all of my grapes. So
yeah.
I don't know. Probably a French Frenchman would probably call us a garage winery. We're in a business park, so we don't have a beautiful chateau, but we do. Have all the winemaking equipment, and we purchase all of our grapes from southern New Mexico. That's where about 85% of the grapes are grown in southern New Mexico. So we purchase all of our grapes, and we will ferment them and age them and bottle them up here, and then we have a tasting room up here. Up here being Rio Rancho, New Mexico, which is a suburb of Albuquerque. We were just talking to Jesse at Vivac, and he's in northern New Mexico, which is north of Santa Fe. So, yeah, that's kind of
are you using stainless steel, or are you using oak, or both, or?
I use flex tanks. So,
oh, very good.
I love flex tanks. In 2002, I started corresponding with Tony Flecknoe Brown, who is the engineer that developed the polymer that that is used in flex tanks. And we kind of, he said, you know, hey, mate, you got to try this. We go back and forth. So he mailed me a couple of 25-gallon tanks that we tried in the 2004 vintage when I was at another winery. And I really, really liked the results. And, yeah, really, really good flavors, nice even oxidation of the red wines. And, you know, we could do whatever so oak-wise on those wines. So that's what we do.
Fantastic. To let the listeners know out there, flex tanks is basically plastic. I mean,
exactly.
You know, you were getting, I've checked into flex tanks. Stainless steel now is outrageously priced. It's jumped to the roof.
Absolutely.
A lot of wineries are switching over to the flex tanks or the plastic style tanks, and it's great. They are absolutely phenomenal what they've done with them over the years. They are a fraction of the cost of stainless steel. So,
Yeah, they're great, and it really is a nice option for a smaller winery. I think, you know, a lot of us maybe we would go micro ox and do that, but it's really, really hard, in my opinion, if you've got a volume that's, you know, 300 or 500 gallons like a lot of us do in New Mexico, to have the degree of control that you need with micro ox. A lot of times you shoot past kind of your end point where you want that wine at as far as softness and richness. And so the flex tanks are nice and slow, and they really approximate a 2-year-old barrel very, very nicely. So, yeah, we've been very happy with it. Yeah, absolutely.
The flex tanks are really a great alternative now. Especially with the price of stainless steel, they're a great alternative. I'm glad to hear that you're using them and having good luck with them. Your wines, tell us about each of them quickly, if you will, please.
You bet. Yeah, we have a white wine called Carnival. It is a blend of Muscat, Riesling, and Malvasia, and it's about 3% residual sugar, kind of a semi-sweet white. And nice aromatics, you know, fermented at about 52 degrees Fahrenheit, and then bottled in about 4 months after harvest. We also do a Chardonnay. Our 2009 Chardonnay is 100% Chardonnay, fermented at about 55 degrees Fahrenheit. And then we did some Surly's Contact. I took a flex tank and insulated it, and then we have, of course, a cooling snake in it. And then we did Surly's aging for about 4 months. So, you know, every other day we just stir the leaves up into the wine to get wine contact and just let the yeast break down, and then just smelled it for H2S. And it's nice and fresh. I mean, you know, leaves react with the oxygen, so they keep the wine in a reduced state and doesn't get oxidized. So we have our 09 Chardonnay. We have our Tres, T-R-E-S, and it is Tempranillo, Grenache, and Cabernet Franc. And it is a semi-sweet red. And if there's one style in New Mexico, it would probably be semi-sweet reds. It goes with the cuisine, with the chilies, things like that, with the hot food. So that is our interpretation, kind of that New Mexico style of wine. Let's see. Moving on, we have a Cabernet Sauvignon, 2008. It's 80% Cabernet Sauvignon, 25% Cab Franc. We have just came out with a 2009 Sangiovese. It's 100% Sangiovese. It's got the typical kind of cherry flavors that you get from Sangiovese. And in New Mexico, New Mexico really shines in my, in my opinion, with Mediterranean varieties, Sangiovese, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, kind of in that region. And red wines really, I think, are really where New Mexico shines. So you got the Sangiovese. We've got a Meritage or a Bordeaux blend, and that's 50% Merlot, 25% Cabernet Franc, 25% Cabernet Sauvignon. And it's got some nice, we use kind of some Burgundy toasted oak, and it's got some nice plummy fruity flavors in that. Let's see, we have a port, or Dolce, and it is the grape is Suzhou, and midway through fermentation, we'll fortify it with two-year-old brandy, and it'll stop about 6% residual sugar, and it comes out about 17% alcohol, and you get kind of that chocolate flavor that you get from that Suzhou grape. It's a very dark port-style wine. And let me see, I'm just looking in the taste room. I think that is, oh, and our real cuvée. Our real cuvée is 50% Syrah, 25% Mourvèdre, and 25% Grenache. So it's kind of a Rhone blend, and kind of got that earthy, leathery thing kind of going on in the nose. So we also have that. So that's the full range.
Fantastic. You're the winemaker.
Yes, yeah, winemaker.
And any formal education?
I went to UC Davis, yeah.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Went to Davis and studied enology, and I'm also a brewmaster. I brew beer at a brew pub here in Rio Rancho, so I kind of split time between both ventures.
So you actually do beer also? Oh, that's cool, yeah.
Yes, sir. Yep.
You're not selling them out of the same store?
No, that would be great if I could. I've never explored that. We would see if the authorities would let me do that. But that I think that would be a great idea. Could try an IPA next to a Cabernet.
I've talked to wineries in Minnesota, and we ran across one up there that does a whole line of beer and wine. And so that's same place. So that's why I was
that
curious.
That would be fabulous. That would be fabulous. Yeah, I would love to do that.
That sounds like that's a lot of fun. So you're keeping yourself quite busy then.
Oh yeah. You gotta, and you know, since I don't grow grapes, I have a bunch of time. I mean, you know, that's the, you know, growing grapes is you know, you figure in New Mexico we'll typically have about 1,000 plants per acre in New Mexico, and it's a lot of work. And I don't know if Jesse told you or anybody else you're talking to from New Mexico, we had such a brutal February as far as winter kill, about pretty much everything, all vinifera varieties north of Truth or Consequences, which is in the middle of New Mexico, pretty much everything north got killed down to the ground.
Wow.
And a lot of the southern vineyards got touched. My grower in Deming, he got down to -3, and he got out of February, but then we had, I believe, 2 spring frosts, and the things like Chardonnay got touched real hard, and so did Nebbiolo.
That's just scary, you know. It really is.
Yeah, well, it's challenging in New Mexico. It's very challenging growing grapes for sure. We've had to figure it out. Yeah.
You say that though, but I was amazed about how many wineries and how much is growing in New Mexico. It shocked me.
Right. The modern New Mexico wine industry came back in the early 80s, 82, 83. You know, a lot of people who lived in New Mexico started vineyards and wineries. There were several French and German and Swiss families and companies that came into to New Mexico because the land was cheap, water rights, things like that, and they really liked the climate for growing grapes. So that kind of started the ball rolling, and then we kind of, you know, the mid to late 80s, we realized that we weren't California, we couldn't do it like California. we really had to reinvent the wheel and figure out how to grow New Mexico grapes and how to make New Mexico wines, and it's definitely a different ball game from that standpoint, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But you guys have been doing a great job down there, though. I mean, it's just
It's a lot of fun. A lot of people are getting international recognition, and really, really good things. It's a very exciting time, and I think New Mexico is a small state. I mean, we're the fifth largest land mass, I believe, in the United States. But our population is almost 2 million, and there's like 6 million in Phoenix, Arizona alone. So it's a very spread out state. And I think New Mexico has come as far as it has as a wine industry because the people who started it and it continued to develop it have really, we've cooperated together. And, you know, winemakers and grape growers can have different opinions on how to do things, but we've really, really done a great job. I mean, you just talked to Jesse Padberg. He's a great guy, and his brother Chris. You know, they're new young guys in the industry, bringing in great energy and vitality. So it's it's great. You get to know everybody. It's small enough that you know everybody in the state. So it's a lot of fun.
Do you have grape growing associations or growers association in Mexico that works with all of you?
Yeah. We have two. We have New Mexico Wine Growers Association, and then we have New Mexico Wine Country. And one is a nonprofit, which that's wine growers, and then Wine Country is a for-profit, and we promote the wine industry through brochures, through wine festivals, and lobbying up in Santa Fe for the interests of the New Mexico wine industry.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so we have those two. It's good.
Well, Mark, tell us all about Matheson Wine Company. Give us emails, Facebook, everything, contact information. So any listeners out there want to get a hold of you, or if they're in the area, they can come and visit you.
You bet. We are, it's Matheson Winery, and we are located in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. It's a suburb of Albuquerque, and our website is www.mathesonwines, M-A-T-H-E-S-O-N, wines.com, and we have tasting room hours. If you're coming out to the southwest, we have tasting room hours Wednesday through Friday, noon to 5. And my phone number, I'm Mark Matheson, my phone number is 505-350-6557. And you can get directions on the website. We have a shopping cart on the website. We can ship to, pretty much every state. And we've got wine clubs and stuff like that. But those are the particulars. And we'd love to have you and come out to New Mexico and try New Mexico wine. So you can get them from Las Cruces, which is down by El Paso. You can get them in the middle of the state, Albuquerque, and then, of course, Santa Fe and up in Dixon. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Well, Mark, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Good information there.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Next time I'm in that area, I will definitely stop by and look you up.
Oh, yeah. We'd love to have you guys out and show you around and get some uber hot green chili on a cheeseburger.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much now, Mark.
Thank you.
All right,
thank
guys.
You.
Take care. Bye-bye now. Bye.
You do. Bye now.
Bye.
We have, and our next guest tonight is Ferd Heimer, I believe it's pronounced. If I'm wrong, please, I'm sure he will correct me.
He's on.
Ferd is Southwest Wines. You on the air, Ferd?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself? Your last name is pronounced?
Heimer, actually.
Heimer,
okay. You almost had it right, but I've heard it so many ways it doesn't matter anymore.
I can imagine. Southwest Wines. Tell us about Southwest Wines.
Well, Southwest Wines is actually a conglomerate of several brands. The winery is actually located in Deming, New Mexico, which is in the southern part of the state, kind of like halfway between the Texas line and the Arizona line, and off of I-10. That's where the winery and the vineyards are a little bit further west in Lordsburg. But we also have three different bistros where we actually serve food and also considered a tasting room in the Las Cruces area, in the Albuquerque area, and also in the Farmington area, which is the northwest corner of the state of New Mexico.
Oh. So your vineyards then, you do have vineyards that you're using yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have over 200 acres.
We have
over 30 different varietals.
Wow. Do you just grow for yourself, or do you grow for other wineries?
We do a little bit of both. I mean, obviously, we kind of keep the good stuff for us, like the Chardonnays, the Cabs, and the Merlots. But we have a lot of stuff that we help other smaller wineries with, not only in New Mexico but in other states.
Oh, wow! Do you I talk to wineries in the northern part of the state? I don't think we've talked to one in the southern part. What type of soil do you have down there?
Well, for the vinifera type of grapes, I mean, most of the vineyards are in the southern part of the state, actually. I mean, from Two to Consequences on down, what happens is if you go further up, like Albuquerque and further up, you're about 5,000 feet of altitude, and that kind of creates a problem with vinifera. Now, the French hybrids will grow anywhere, obviously, but the vinifera, what I mean by vinifera for your listeners, obviously, your Chardonnays, your Cabernets, your Merlot, your Syrahs, and your Riesling and so forth. But they grow better. I mean, once you get into the southern part of the state, you start dropping altitude to about 4,200 feet, and that's where we still have the warm days, but it does cool off at night because of the high altitude.
Uh-huh. So you're... well, I'm sorry, I lost my question there. The southern part of the state, when do you get your bud break? When do you harvest?
Well, depending on what type of sugar we want to harvest at. I mean, the bud break is around mid-May. Veraison is about right now. Veraison is when the grapes start turning color from like it's from a green berry to a red or yellow for white grape. And then from flowering, you get to consider about 100 days, which flowering happens about beginning of June, first 2 weeks of June, and then from there, 100 days out. So that puts us toward the end of August, mid-September.
Oh, okay. So it's about the same as any other in that climate area there.
That's correct. I mean, if we, like I said, if we want some grapes that we want to mature, I mean, harvest early, so we can still have high acidity, depending on the ones we want to achieve with, we'll harvest a little bit earlier, and then if we want the 13-14% alcohol or 24-25 bricks, then we'll harvest a little bit later.
All right. Is you using both stainless steel and oak?
Yes, sir. We obviously bring all the grapes to the winery, and for the white wine, we'll do the pressing, and the juice will go into stainless steel, and we'll do the racking, and then we'll go into the barrels, and then for the red wine, we have open top containers, and then from there it'll go into oak barrels as well.
Okay, and you are the winemaker there, right?
I am actually the sommelier there. The winemaker is another gentleman by the name of Philippe Lito. But I've been involved in the wine business for over 30 years Europe and here. So.
Wow! So you've got yourself education behind you.
Education, I would say.
Yeah.
Yes, I do, sir.
Yeah. Well, very good.
That's a fun part about the wine business. I mean, I've been involved in all aspects of it, from planting grapes to making wine to selling it to now. I'm really enjoying the sommelier part of it. I mean, I get to taste a lot of different wines from different regions.
The government of New Mexico, I haven't asked our other speakers. I'm going to ask you. The government of New Mexico, are they a help or a hindrance to you and to wineries in general?
No, they are actually very supportive, whether they're on the liberal side or conservative side. The wine industry is something that it's been supported since I've been in New Mexico for 25 years. There's been a lot of support. I mean, there's some programs that have been they created a viticulturist position at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces with the help of the state through the economic development department, and then but also there's some marketing money available, and then they're really supportive of it.
Are they? Well, that's good. I mean, so many states you find that they end up battling the wineries more so than they help, which end up not helping anyone.
Yeah, you always have some groups here and there that anti-alcohol that try to hinder the process of the winemaking and the support of it, but we try to go around them and work with them.
Are you in any AVA, any of your vineyards in any of the three AVAs in New Mexico?
Yep, actually we're in the Mesilla Valley AVA.
Oh, okay. Tell us about the Mesilla Valley AVA. I mean, I haven't had an opportunity to tell listeners about the three AVAs, so since you are in one of them, I'll let you tell a little bit about
that. The Mesilla Valley Appellation is, it starts around, I'm going to say, just south of just north of Las Cruces, and it encompasses the rest of the whole southern part of the state. I mean, the Mesilla Valley kind of follows the Rio Grande River from like I said, just north of Las Cruces all the way down to El Paso, pretty much.
Uh-huh.
That's what they call the Mesilla Valley.
Those are rather large.
Middle Rio Grande. Middle Rio Grande is the largest one, actually.
Is it the largest? Okay. And so the Mesilla Valley is a... Well, paperwork that I was looking at, I did some research on it, and it shows the Mesilla Valley just a tad bit larger than the Middle Rio Grande Valley AVA.
They might have changed the boundaries of the...
Yeah.
Some of them, I'm not sure yet.
It's not important. So you have your AVA, your Mesilla Valley AVA, and then New Mexico AVA. Those are
Most of the people use the New Mexico AVA. I mean, a lot of people blend grapes from one appellation to another, so you can't really stick with one particular AVA.
That's true too. Let's see. Do you ship to all states, or are you restricted on your shipping, or what is?
As far as the retail shipping out of the tasting rooms, now we ship pretty much everywhere, and on the wholesale side, I mean, out of state, we in the last couple of months we just opened 28 states. So
wow!
Some of the wines will be available in the next 6 months, but that's part of my job, actually, to open new territories and expose the wines to other states. But as far as the retail or tasting room, you can go to Southwest Wines with an S and Southwest spelled out, southwestwines.com. And you will see that we have actually, like, I'm going to call it four different levels of wines. The first brand that we have is called the Blue Teal. That was created in 1984 by the founding fathers of the company, Daniel Velescon, the owners.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty affordable type of wine. Again, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Zinfandel. And then after that, we move on to the second level of wine, which is the St. Clair wine. And those also, there's more white wine in that particular brand. I mean, there's Riesling, Gewürz. Actually, the Gewürz got the best white wine award in San Francisco about 6 months ago.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And then on top of that, we have what they call the D.H. Lescombe line, and those are a little bit more expensive, but they're definitely better wines, and they're like $20 caps and stuff like that. And then after that, we also do a lot of specialty wines. We have a pomegranate wine, and then we have a triple berry wine, which includes the cranberry, blackberry, and acai, and those are juice added to a red wine blend.
Oh.
As well as the pomegranate. I mean, those are very popular here in New Mexico. But the biggest success we've had so far is actually with our Mimosa, which is speaks for itself. There's about 30% of fresh orange juice added to a white base wine.
Oh.
And it is about 8% of alcohol, so really easy to drink it, but really fresh, and it's really a mimosa. So, and that's the one that really has a lot of success right now, especially with those nice summer days that we have.
It sounds like it's delicious, actually. So you do have a whole line of different wines here, though. Then it's
We have over 73 products available.
Wow.
Yeah. We try to cover the whole spectrum of the American consumers or palate, however you want to qualify it.
And I'll tell you, with that many wines, you will definitely do it. Unbelievable amount of wines there.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of work for the guys in the production area, definitely.
Do you have orchards for the plum and the peach and the pomegranate and
no,
all that?
No, we kind of bring those from wherever it's available. I mean, we use a broker that that help us source those type of product. I mean, like the orange juice is could be coming sometime from Texas, sometime from Florida. We don't know exactly, but we use a broker to source all that.
Uh-huh. Well, fascinating. I never realized that you guys were so large down there. I mean, I've called back and forth a few times trying to get on, and then, you know, I find out that you guys are enormous. Are you the largest producers in the state?
We're getting there. I believe the Blue Jay Winery is still the largest in production, but we're catching on.
I mean, it's just, wow, you have a lot of them there, and that's just, And I noticed I was on your website, and I am on your website. I noticed you have a list here of a very long list of places that handle your wine. So you guys end up doing a lot of shipping, too, it seems like, throughout the state.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, like I said, the out-of-state market has been developed here, in the last 2 or 3 months. I mean, Texas and Arizona, we started that a long time ago, but we made a little bit of changes and switches of distributor, and now the wines are going to be widely available in those two states, and as well as Florida, as a matter of fact.
Oh, you are available down here?
Yes. But it's through the Publix, I believe, and the Cost Buses.
What brand? I mean, since you have so many.
The Mimosa is definitely the big one.
So the Mimosa is going to be down here?
Yep, it is.
Oh, fantastic. Well, when will that be available?
It should be on the shelves at Cost Plus for sure, because we kind of nailed down a national program with that chain of stores, and they're really supportive of it, and it should be in every Cost Plus throughout the country.
We will have to check that out. That sounds fascinating. Yeah. Farrah, give us all the information for Southwest Winery. Tell us, the contact information, phone numbers, where you're located, email address, the Facebook if you have it, and all that good stuff.
Sure. So obviously the main website is southwestwines with a .com, Southwest spelled out, wines with an S. And if you go just to that website, you will be able to link to our different brands, the Blue Teal. So you can also go to blueteal.com, or you could go to sinclair.com. Or D.H. Lescombe, which is, again, the family name, .com. I mean, if you go to southwestwines.com, you should be able to go and navigate to all the different other websites that we have. And then, obviously, we have the three bistros and tasting room. This is Sinclair Bistro and Winery.com. Mm. And my phone number is 505-944-5459, and I'll be more than happy to help anybody who needs help.
Sounds great. And anyone out there who wants to get a hold of you, that is his cell number, so he will be answering the phone for you. And you can sign up for their email newsletter and all sorts of stuff on these sites. So thank you, Farrah, for taking the time out and visiting with us this evening. I appreciate it. And we hope people will come down there. And I will be checking out Publix for that Mimosa.
I appreciate it, yes, and thanks for having us on and promoting New Mexico wines, definitely.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening now.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. And we've got one more coming on with us. I told you we had a busy night. Ken Stark from La Vino Winery is waiting for us. He's on hold now. He's gonna be here in just a second. I'm noticing the switchboard. He's gonna be joining us in just a second here. Ken, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, oh, very good. Ken Stark from La Vina. Is that correct, La Vina?
Yeah, you got to put that Enya over the top, so it sounds like La Vina, but
La
that's
Vina.
Pretty close.
Like El Nino.
Like
exactly.
La Vina. Yeah, La Vina.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Tell us about La Vina Winery.
Well, La Vina is the oldest winery in New Mexico. It started in 1977 by a professor at the University of Texas of El Paso.
Oh.
And so 1977 is not a long time, but we've been around for a while. I bought the winery in 1993, and We produce about 21 varietals, 25 acres of grapes. So we're not certainly not the biggest vineyard in the southern part of the state, but it's a nice business, very close to El Paso, Texas, in the Mesilla Valley.
Oh, so you're in the far eastern part of the state then?
We're right between Las Cruces, New Mexico, which is in the very southern part of New Mexico, and El Paso, which is in that little corner right on the left side of Texas, right very close to probably where we are is within about 3 miles of the Texas border and about 10 or 11 miles from Mexico.
Wow. So you're right down there in the little old tip, huh?
Exactly.
Do you grow your own grapes then?
Yeah. We have 25 acres. We grow about 125 tons a year.
Wow. Are you the winemaker?
I have been, but I'm sort of winemaker emeritus. You know, the term we use is head wino, but that means what that means is that I get to help with all the blending, which means drinking in my case.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't have to do any of the hose toting.
Oh, well, that's always good. That's,
yeah.
You know, that hose toting can be cumbersome.
I've done a lot of years of hose toting.
Have you? Yeah, you paid your dues then.
Excuse me?
You've paid your dues.
Yes, I have. Yes. I started working in wineries in the late 80s in Albuquerque, and just went to work in a winery to learn how. I would say that winemaking was one of my hobbies, but actually wine drinking was one of my hobbies, and I went to work in a winery to accentuate that hobby, and so it worked into a nice career for me.
Oh, very good. So you said you bought the winery in 2004?
1993.
You bought it in 93?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's been in existence since 1977. They had a couple of owners before me.
Oh, okay. So, and type of grapes you have in your vineyard is what?
Well, it's pretty broad. We have 21 varieties, so we have all of the French varieties that you would think normally, you know, Cabernet and Chardonnay and German Riesling and that sort of thing. But we have several Italian varietals. This is a relatively warm growing climate, as you might know. We're not quite as warm here in the Mesilla Valley as El Paso is, but still fairly warm. Nighttime temperatures probably in the low 70s, and daytime temperatures obviously can be over 100 in parts of the summer. But we have also a lot of varietals from Italy, stuff like Dolcetto and Sangiovese, and we also have a lot of southern Rhone varietals, you know, Grenache, Cinsault, Morvedra, Viognier, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you use stainless steel or oak or plastic? You know.
Yeah, well, we do have some plastic tanks for like overflow occasions, but we pretty much have stainless steel for everything. We have a lot of variable capacity tanks with 21 varietals. We have to make a lot of different wines, and sometimes we actually have to separate even different clones. So we will sometimes ferment, let's say, two different clones of Merlot in different tanks and two different clones of Cabernet in different tanks and two different Chardonnays in different tanks. So it takes a lot of different tanks. When you're making wine from one geographical area, to get the most varietal difference as you can, you need to plant a lot of different clones, and by keeping those separate, it helps us to maximize whatever those components are. if you're in a place where you can, let's say in California, where you can choose from the North Coast and the Central Valley and Napa and Sonoma and kind of mix and match that way, you're in a lot better position to pick up different flavors. But if you're doing everything from your own vineyard, and all of our wines are estate bottled, we have to do that by selection of different clones in the vineyard and then keeping those clones separate when we do fermentation.
Uh-huh. So you mentioned you're in the Mesilla Valley. You're not in the Rio Grande, Middle Rio Grande AVA. You are part of the Mesilla AVA?
Yeah, we're in the Mesilla Valley, and Mesilla Valley is actually the, I believe that it's the oldest appellation in New Mexico. It runs basically from El Paso, Texas, to just north of Las Cruces, and it's just a little section of the Rio Grande Valley that is in the southern part of the state. And so the other appellations in New Mexico, the central one would be the one you mentioned, and the other one would be the Members Valley, which is over close to Deming and Lordsburg, New Mexico.
Oh, okay. You know, not knowing where these things are, I look them up, and then I get confused about where they are. So right. You're in the Mesilla Valley AVA,
exactly.
Then.
Exactly. And actually, most of the grapes in New Mexico are grown in the southern half of the state. If you drew a line halfway across the state or north and south, that would be approximately Albuquerque. And it gets pretty cold from Albuquerque north, and so it's difficult, not impossible, but certainly difficult to grow a lot of varietals that need longer growing seasons up north. And so a lot of the wineries in the northern part of the state come to the southern part of the state to buy the grapes that they use to produce their wine.
And a lot of them we've talked to in the northern part of the states are always talking about the getting their wines and the grapes from the southern part of the state. So
exactly.
It is basically the area for the growing and all that. Your soil then in that valley then is just a sandy loam?
It is a sandy loam. It's pretty much alluvial because the river obviously used to flow all over the valley, so its sedimentation is laid in like that. We have the same problems that all vineyards in the southwest have. We have very high pH water and very high pH soils. And so it's not the very best possible soil conditions that we'd like, but we are able to correct some of that with using different techniques in the vineyard to try to make it easier for the plants. But grape plants like a pH of around 7, and
right.
So pH 8 is a little bit high for grapes, although grapes can grow pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
And then we also have the secondary problem, just like if you were in Napa and looked in the valley floor, you see that the grapes themselves are much more aggressive and produce more fruit. And we have that same problem here in our valley. It's a really good place to grow almost anything, and grapes need to struggle a little bit. So we have to do that struggling by kind of shorting them a little bit on water. So that's kind of how we manage that, and hope for a cooler vintage. And that those two things help give us a good year when we have one.
Yeah. Ken, give me a second here. We are going off the live program. We're going to be picking up on archive here in just a second. So if you're listening to us live, then you can always tune in on the archive and pick us up on archive. We'll be going off. We're not going to leave Ken quite yet. We're going to talk to him a little bit more. But thank you for listening to us if you are live. And the rest of the interview with Ken from La Viña Winery will be on the archive, so don't run away. Pick us there, and we're going to continue with Ken here for a little bit more. Let's see, where was he? Shipping. I've always asked this, and I always like to find out what other people say about shipping in the state, in the state itself, as far as friendly, not friendly, mediocre. How do they treat the winery?
Well, New Mexico was always a reciprocal state until those laws began being changed. I always felt like the reciprocal laws were actually very friendly, and at least the small wineries and the laws that they have enacted since those laws have changed have been a little harder, because each winery tends to have to deal with each state or deal with a shipper to do a legal job. There are obviously there are some states that we can still ship to legally without paying taxes to the state where we're sending the wine to. But we don't ship a lot. We're primarily a local winery. Our area here is very near El Paso, Texas, population about 750,000, whereas Mexico, right next door, is about a million and a half.
Jeez.
And Las Cruces, New Mexico, is about 100,000. So our metropolitan area is well over 2 million, and most of our business is from local people, not particularly tourists. Not saying that tourists don't come to El Paso, but our business primarily is local people. And there's a lot of months of the year that we do not ship, particularly the times that it's hot, say from June through September. Absolutely, we don't ship anything. And even in a hot year, May through mid-October, we'll look at what the temperatures are. We don't like to send our wines at a time when they might be sitting in a warehouse in Phoenix for a day or two. So,
yeah. Do you get business from Juarez?
Sure. We get a lot of business from Mexico.
There's no problem taking it across the border.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, my winemaker is from Chile, and his wife is from Chile, and his background, he had about 10 years of experience in Chile and some experience in California, but so they work out really well with our Hispanic clients. We have about I'd say about 50% of our clientele, maybe Spanish is not their prime language, but they do speak Spanish, so that's an important part of our business.
Well, I was going to say, with your location, I was just, so there's no problem taking it back and forth across the border then?
No, I wouldn't think that a small amount. There might be some tariff problems for those people if they were taking a larger amount, but, you know, a few bottles, they're not going to get in trouble for that.
I don't know. We're not affected by it over here in Florida, so, you know.
Well, it's an interesting thing, and I'll be a booster a little bit for El Paso, Texas. Juarez has a horrible reputation. It's probably the most dangerous place in our hemisphere, you know.
Yeah, right.
And yet, El Paso is one of the safest cities, or maybe the safest city on the border, at least, is one of the safest cities in America as far as the homicide rate and so forth. And So it gives El Paso a bad name, but actually that danger really doesn't cross the border, and that's a good thing for your listeners to know.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's very good. Mike, you've been busy getting callers in. Do you have any questions you have for Ken here tonight?
I don't think I do this time.
Oh my God.
I was on. You have a lot of events over there. You have a Fall Harvest Festival coming up in October, and you do quite a few venues in that area. That's for sure. I'm looking through your website and everything.
You know, every winery. Robert Mondavi always said that without special events, he couldn't have grown like he did. And I think every small winery, if they work on their tasting rooms, they work on their events, that's where the money is. It's not in wholesale. And yes, I would say we have the oldest wine festival in the state. The first wine festival that was ever done in New Mexico was done at La Viña about, I would say, 1980. And we've continued that as our harvest festival is still going on. And we do a fall festival, which kind of centers more on jazz and blues. And those events are very worthwhile to us. We have between 5,000 and 10,000 people at
wow.
year of those events. Yeah.
Wow.
But it's a good event for cash flow.
Yeah, you have that much room for parking and everything?
Yeah, we have 9 acres of pecan trees, and those trees have Bermuda grass under them, and we park cars there. People walk through the vineyard and up to the we have about 2 acres of grassed area of grounds with nice trees and everything, and people show up and put their blanket out and have some wine. We have probably 75 arts and crafts vendors, and we have about 200 to 300 volunteers that help us pour wine. It takes a lot of volunteers to pour wine for 10,000 people.
Yeah, so. I can imagine.
But everybody has a good time. April and October in this area is a great time to be out.
It sounds fascinating. Well, Ken, thank you very much for being on the program with us tonight. And I give you an opportunity to give us all of your contact information, emails, addresses, address, phone number, Facebook address if you have one, everything that you can think of. So if anybody wants to get a hold of La Viña Winery, they may do so. And if they're down in that area, they can visit you.
Thank you very much. Obviously, Facebook is La Viña Winery, and email would be laviñawinery.com would be the website. We're located basically halfway between Las Cruces and New Mexico and El Paso, Texas, on Highway 28. It's a lovely place. There's a lot of pecans and green area in here. If you ever get close to this part of the world, it's a great place to visit. 4201 South Highway 28 in La Union. If you're Spanish, you say La Union, New Mexico. And we're open every day but Wednesday. Tasting rooms open every day. We have a tour of the winery available every day at 11:30. And golly, if you want to have your wedding here, just give us a call at 575-882-7632. We'd be glad to have you here.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Ken, thank you very much for your time tonight. Thank you for joining us. And whenever I get down to that area, I will definitely be stopping by and visiting you.
Gentlemen, thank
Absolutely.
You for having us.
And you're
thank
quite
you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow.
All
that
right.
That was a big show. That was a lot of
really a lot of information, a lot of people. It was fun.
We had four guests on, and all we had was a small studio audience still clapping. And then there
right.
we go. Now we're talking.
There we go.
There they are. Okay. You know what? I was just looking at this. We had we started at, well, obviously at 7 o'clock. We had some great wine talk there, and then we had the largest winery vineyard in New Mexico with Southwest Wines, and then
right.
we had the oldest in New Mexico with
yeah.
Ken just now. So I was like, oh, you know,
that's a good variety there. Yeah,
yeah, and thank you, Jesse and Mark as well. Just a great show. It was getting everybody on here, and it was a lot of good information and very interesting.
It really was, yeah.
And I'm really shocked. I wasn't expecting this from New Mexico. Two shows, and
me
we had six guests from New Mexico. I mean,
yeah, I know.
That's amazing.
It is amazing, and I keep saying that. In fact, while we talked a little bit, and I'm going to cover this quickly before we leave New Mexico.
Sure.
The AVAs, New Mexico does have three AVAs, American Viticulture Areas, Middle Rio Grande Valley. It is located in the watershed of the Rio Grande in central New Mexico, again, south of Albuquerque, because that's, Ken just pointed out for us, the growing areas in New Mexico is the southern part of New Mexico. So the Rio Grande Valley is in south of Albuquerque along the Rio Grande River. It is basically the watershed of Rio Grande in central New Mexico. Region is approximately 278,400 acres. Has a variety of French hybrid and Vitis vinifera grapes. A lot of research by New Mexico State University in this area, too. They've done quite a bit in agriculture areas and stuff. Another area, the Membrus Valley AVA. And the Membrus Valley is located in southwestern New Mexico near the towns of Deming and Silver City. Now, we just talked to Ken about Mesilla Valley AVA. Mesilla Valley AVA is just to the east of the Membrus Valley AVA. Mesilla Valley is, they all run pretty close together. They're all right there, real close together. The Mesilla Valley AVA does take in part of Texas, though, in that area there, the little finger over to the side of Texas. The Membrus Valley AVA is approximately 636,800 acres. The vineyards, about 2,000 acres planted in vineyards, which is one of the biggest ones planted in vineyards. Elevation about 4,000 to 6,000 feet above sea level. Again, almost all of New Mexico, same type of soil, same type of climate and all that. So we've heard our guests talk about those, all the different climates, but the AVAs fall into those. But there, and then the Mesilla Valley AVA is primarily in central southern New Mexico, again, south of Albuquerque. It does dip over into Texas a little bit. This area here, the Mesilla Valley AVA, was where grapes were first planted just outside of El Paso and back in 1650. A Spanish explorer, Don Juan de Onate, I believe it's pronounced de Onate, arrived in there in 1598, and he named it the Valley Tranquil de la Mesilla, and it became known as the Mesilla Valley. It is a hot, dry climate, but very conducive to the Italian-style grapes. As we found throughout talking to our guests, a lot of Italian-style grapes growing in New Mexico. So those were the AVAs. I wanted to talk about those. I wanted to cover them a little bit because we've didn't really get an opportunity to do it because of our guest speakers. So
yeah, and they're talking the south end of New Mexico is I think one of them said they were up around 4,000 feet. The north end's all up around 6,000 feet or above, and I'm sitting here and it's 122 feet in elevation.
And I think I'm a little bit shorter than I think I'm like out 20 feet elevation.
Yeah, yeah. Closer to the water. Of course, it probably takes them several hours to get to a beach where it's 10 minutes, 20 minutes from here. But
that's true.
It's amazing. It's just the contrast between the northern wineries that don't produce the grapes and order from the south, and then we have the southern vineyards and we just covered the state really, really well in the last show and this one. This is amazing.
All right.
And what are we up to next?
We can do New York, which I think New York's going to take 3-4 weeks. I want to spend some time on New York.
That many in New York?
Well, we've got the Finger Lakes, which is enormous.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We've got the Hudson Valley, which is very large. We've got the escarpment right south of Buffalo that has a lot of wineries. We've got Long Island, North Branch of Long Island, particularly that is they tore out all the potato fields and they put in grapevines, and so that's a lot of grow there. So we can spend some time on New York and then do Nevada after
because that's
that.
Because that's alphabetical.
Well, yeah. Nevada should have been before all these news, you know. But I went by my site I'm going on here, and they decided to throw in Nevada after these. So
there you go.
You know, what
enough.
Can I say?
But, that's good enough.
Yeah. New York has 302 wineries from what I'm seeing on my chart here. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're like third in the nation. Well, according to this chart, they fall in second in the nation. But, again, this chart isn't up to date. So I think they are fourth. Them and Pennsylvania bounce back and forth in the number of wineries.
Oh, that's interesting.
But,
I never thought about Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Pennsylvania's got a lot of wineries too, but I do want to spend some time. So why don't we block out the next 3 or 4 weeks for New York wineries?
Okay.
And then we'll do Nevada after that, although it's not really in alphabetical order, but it will work. Nevada doesn't have a whole lot of wineries, so it's going to be a week. But we'll do New York, and we'll see what we can see who we can get on with New York. I've talked to people in New York already, so I'll just call them and say, "Hey, I want you on the program." So
you got to work on the New York accent. We both have to have New York accents next week.
Okay, we'll have to practice that.
And my New York name is going to be Vinny.
Vinny?
Vinny, come on, it's a Vinny.
Vinny's going to call you.
Yeah.
I can't see it, but I'm using my hands too. Okay.
So. Oh yeah, there you go.
Vinny's going to call you.
Yeah, Vinny. Okay.
Forget
That'll
about
be good.
It.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So we'll look at New York for the next 3 or 4 weeks, and that should be – that's a lot of wineries.
They have a lot of wineries. We can spend – and we may end up spending even more time if we get good response from them, so who knows.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll see if we can get them on the air too. So, but New Mexico, really, really happy with the response from New Mexico. They love to talk about it, and it sounds like we didn't have any problems getting guests on the program. That's
New Mexico is great. I mean, I almost makes me excited. I'd like to go down and just visit some of the wineries and see the area down there now, because it's just really quite a diverse area for grape growing, it seems. So
I think next time the bus people come over, we'll just kick them off the bus, we'll hop on the bus and tell them to take us to New Mexico.
There we go.
That's right. They can
sounds
walk
good
home.
To me.
All right, so we'll do New York. Everyone tune in next week for the beginning of New York month, I guess.
Sounds about right. I think it's going to take us that long.
So join us Thursday, which would be July 20 something, and 21st actually,
21st,
at 7 p.m. Eastern time for All About Wine, and we'll start on New York for about 3 or 4 weeks, maybe longer. Who knows?
Sounds
like it's another California episode.
We stretched it out. Yeah,
we did. So thank you all, everybody, for listening. Ron, thank you as always for
thank you
having a very informative and educational and entertaining show. And we'll see everybody next week. And
thank you for tuning in.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you all next time. All right. And here, I guess we would play the official, closing song, or whatever. That's what it's going to sound like. I'll just come on and go. I'll have a top hat and a cane and one of those dance things across the stage. And, that's it. All right. We'll see y'all next week. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thanks for tuning in.